Many listeners will remember the horrific tragedy at Waco, Texas. It was 30 years ago this month.
The FBI says 90 adults and 20 children remain in the compound.
The 40th day of the siege at David Koresh's compound is ending just like the other 39.
David, it is time to submit and surrender to the proper authority.
What began as a fiasco on the 28th of February ended as a total disaster today.
It began with a botched government raid on a religious cult, then the longest gunfight in U.S. law enforcement history, and then a 51-day siege that ended in fiery destruction and death. Bestselling author Stephen Talte has a new book out. It's called Koresh, The True Story of David Koresh and the Tragedy at Waco. Stephen, welcome to Here and Now.
Great to be here.
Many of us with a hazy memory of the 90s frame Waco as a deranged cult leader on one side, inept federal agents and their managers on the other. What is the reality you found about David Koresh, the head of the Branch Davidians, the person?
What I found about Koresh was really fascinating. I found that he started wanting to do good. He really wanted to be this Christian figure. So he went out of his way to help drug addicts, people who'd had difficult childhoods. But it wasn't until he got to Waco, this opportunity to become really a leader and to be exalted in a way that he had never had before, that he really changed. So he became a very dark figure by the end of the story. And to pick up on your point, I do think it is sort of natural to look at a cult and think, oh my God, those freaks, those weirdos, they have nothing to do with me. But I think the themes and the sort of patterns that emerge in this story are ones that we're seeing on a much larger scale today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we'll talk about that. I mean, for this book, you spoke to former members of the Branch Davidians who survived, with government agents who were there. You went through troves of documents. Tell us a little bit of his childhood. He was born Vernon Howell in rural Texas. What about his childhood connects to who he later became?
You know, the most important thing I found is that he was consistently rejected by the men in his life, by his father who abandoned him, by his stepfathers, by boyfriends of his mother.
He was also abused by a key man, sexually abused.
Yes. And the strange thing about Waco is, in a way, he kind of recreated his childhood there. He did the same things to his followers that were done to him. So this was really kind of a reflection of where he came from.
The man who later changed his name to David Koresh was also a talented car mechanic and a talented musician. How did he draw in his followers as he convinced himself and them that he was the chosen one?
Well, he really was a brilliant performer. I mean, if you were in the room with him, he exerted this incredible sway over you. He was able to draw you into these Bible stories that he connected. He was really brilliant at that. And I think stage performing really helped him with that. You know, he was able to figure out what people needed in their lives. That was also key to his success. He would meet somebody, and within really 2 minutes, he could tell what you were yearning for. And he aimed to provide that. So with the women in the cult, yes, he became the love of their lives, as well as the new Messiah.
And at a certain point, before events with the government agents start to happen, David Koresh becomes very controlling. He starves members of food in the compound. He doesn't let people leave. People cannot talk freely on the phone about what's happening on the inside. How did the relationship become one of fear?
Well, I think he knew that he had promised his followers the end times. He'd promised them the apocalypse. So he really kind of courted a confrontation with the government. He felt that they were going to come for him because of the underage girls. So in a way, he sort of sensed things were happening, but he also pushed them forward. He wanted that standoff with the government. He wanted scriptures to be revealed as true, and he wanted to be the new Messiah. So for that to happen, this old world has to end to bring in the new world, you know, into being.
Federal law enforcement officials get word of all these weapons that are amassed at the Branch Davidians compound in Waco, Texas. They get wind of allegations of child sex abuse, and they start planning this raid. But as far as the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, the ATF, they really bungled this, and you go into it. What were the key mistakes on the government side?
You know, I think a lot of it stemmed from overconfidence. The ATF specializes in these kinds of raids, but a lot of times they're facing gunrunners or drug gangs or something like that, and they had very little experience with a religious cult. I do want to say that the guys on the ground performed well. This was not bungled by the agents who carried out the mission. This was all mismanagement, really, at the middle level. Guys planning the mission could really have arrested him outside the compound and avoided all this tragedy, but signals were missed. It was poor communication. And I just think they expected this to be another in the thousands of raids that they'd carried out. And of course, it was completely different.
And the agents planned on having the element of surprise. In the end, they didn't have it. What happened?
One of the members went out to get the newspaper that morning and ran into a journalist who was covering this impending raid and learned about the details and sort of ran back to the compound. And the agents really walked into sort of a turkey shoot. They had very little cover, and four of them died in the initial raid.
Yeah. Tell us briefly about how the raid went so wrong on February 28th, 93.
Well, basically a shot was fired. We don't know who fired it. It could have been the ATF, could have been the Davidians. And after that, just a huge shootout erupted. A lot of the agents were rushing towards the building. They were exposed. They were getting picked off, and some of the Davidians were killed as well.
And then after that, a standoff going through March and April of 1993, negotiations that grinded on. What did you learn as far as kind of reading the transcripts of these phone calls between key government actors and David Koresh and other key leaders of the Branch Davidians at that moment as far as their communications? Anything surprise you?
Yeah, he comes across as a really sort of almost charming guy, except when you challenge his power. When the FBI pushes him to release more people, you see the sort of very dark David Koresh. He's very sort of vindictive, flies into rages, and just doesn't want anyone challenging his position. That really becomes the main issue.
What did you learn about the key actors on the federal side and, you know, what their internal discussions were?
Well, there's really a split between the tactical guys, the guys with the guns out in the field, and their commanders, and the negotiators. The tactical guys wanted really to punish and kind of coerce David Koresh into coming out. And the negotiators felt that wouldn't work with a guy like David Koresh. They wanted to entice him, play up to his vanity, and get the siege ended. But of course, after 51 days, patience had worn thin, and the FBI went in, and that's when we had the fire.
Yeah. And remind us how that transpired.
The FBI went in with specially equipped tanks to insert tear gas into the compound. Again, this is a controversy. Who set the fire, the FBI or the Davidians? Mm-hmm. The FBI had actual, you know, bugs inside the compound. And we can hear the Davidians talk about fuel and kerosene and lighting things up. I think that controversy is settled. The Davidians definitely set that fire.
And as far as David Koresh, did you learn kind of new pieces of the story as far as his plans? This fire, was this all part of how he kind of framed the end times for this group?
Yes, this was a confrontation with Babylon. The army, the government had become the enemy. And there was a plan to lure FBI agents in and have them be part of the carnage. When that didn't happen, they went full bore into this inferno. They were going to be transformed into new beings. They were going to become eternal beings and help Jesus fight the infidels, you know, in the final war. So that was the meaning of the fire. They had to sort of be cleansed and transformed in order to be one of Christ's soldiers.
So here we are talking 30 years after the fact. And in some right-wing circles, there's a particular framing as people think about Waco. The Oklahoma City bomber, Timothy McVeigh, of course, has cited this as an energizing moment for him. Alex Jones, a right-wing radio host, was in college at the time and, you know, went on the air soon after. So how has Waco lived on?
You know, it's fascinating. I mean, I think this is one reason why Donald Trump launched his campaign from Waco just a few weeks ago, almost as if Waco had become, you know, a sacred shrine, another Alamo or another Plymouth Rock. For people on the far right, David Koresh represents, you know, standing up to the government. He's really a martyr to not only gun rights, but to this idea that the federal government has become detached from the people and really is now a force for evil.
Stephen, finally, What did you learn from this project?
You know, I spent 3 years doing this, and what was sort of disturbing to me is that I see what happened within David Koresh's life and his followers kind of re-expressed in larger form today in America. I mean, more and more people are inhabiting these conspiracy theories. They're segregating into, you know, their own communities, both residentially and sort of online. I just see this thing that David Koresh was able to do, which is to get you to inhabit his worldview, not only to talk about it or slightly believe in it, but to actually live inside these conspiracy theories. And that's really happening on a much wider scale today. And when you make reality the enemy, it becomes very dangerous.
The book is Koresh, the true story of David Koresh and the tragedy at Waco. And the author, Stephen Talty. Stephen, thanks so much for the time.
Thanks for having me.